Whether you're a Class 5 rafter or just looking for a couple of laughs, these two have you covered. Welcome to Aaron and Zach's Better Than Mediocre Rafting Show.
Well, happy Friday and welcome to Dougie and Zach's Entertaining Rafting Show with our friend John, who we'll introduce in a few minutes. And this is normally Aaron and Zach's entitled Naive Rafting Show, but Aaron's on the subway this week. And so Dougie's replacing him, and we're going to be entertaining instead of naive and entitled this week. If you're listening to this on our podcast, River Talk Podcast, you're just hearing the audio. The best part is the video. So you can listen to it on the podcast, but we highly recommend the video because we'll refer to things there. And yeah, let's get started. What do you think, Dougie? Should we do this?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. And John, welcome. We're happy to have you. And we're going to do some catch up from our Tuesday show that we wanted to talk about. And then we'll jump into the main topic of the show we have you on. And the first thing is this. Dougie, you remember talking about this?
I do. Yeah.
This is Mark Rivers, PT, DPT, badass, his boat. And actually another physical therapist friend of ours. This is his boat.
Wow.
He's a DPT, which I understand is a doctor of physical therapy.
Yep.
And he's also a badass.
It seems that way.
Yeah. And so this is a little 12-foot boat he loaded down for the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
So he did.
Yeah, you can't have a boat like that and not be a badass.
Yeah. Absolutely. But what Dougie, and so he was telling us how you can get all the stuff you need for a long trip on a 12-foot boat or a fat cat. This is called a fat cat. And I would contend that yes, the things will actually fit and you will float down the Grand Canyon, but I don't think this would work for a low water middle fork salmon because those tubes will be so deep in the water and they'll be catching rocks.
Hmm.
What do you think, Fresh?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. They'd be lower. They have just lower buoyancy than a longer raft. Yeah.
So if I brought this much stuff on the middle fork of low water, I'd want at least a 14 and a half, probably a 16 foot boat.
What do you think is the draw of that boat, say? Like how deep underwater do you think it sits?
I what I'm gonna do is make a guess, and then Mark is gonna come on and say I'm wrong.
Okay.
But I'm gonna guess 3 or 4 inches. That's a lot of stuff. And imagine putting him on it too.
And then what do you think like that empty would be?
An inch.
Okay.
I'm just guessing. Look at that.
Bear, so 2 inches of water, 2 inches difference.
I mean, that's just a wild guess.
Yeah.
I'm probably wrong.
I bet it's, somewhere two, maybe a little bit more, 3 inches.
It'd be interesting to measure it. That would be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Also, I forgot about this. Barry, thanks for becoming a member. Those of you know Barry Cruz, he's another badass out there. And I certainly appreciate the support, Barry. Okay, so the other thing I want to show you, Fresh, before we get started with the whole show here, let me remove this. Stops. I'm going to share one more screen. Chrome. There we go. This is a cool video that I found, and there's this channel called Skoldale Productions, and I highly recommend following it. There's a lot of really cool videos about rafting and risk. And I thought this was really cool too, in terms of how to rescue and how to be safe on the river. And I think it's not really a curve, because a curve isn't a straight line, but you guys know get the point that like the best way to be safe is to like prevent the problem, right? And then the next best thing is to rescue yourself. We've been talking about this stuff a lot, and then rescue within your group, right? And so if you don't have a group, if you're by yourself, you skip this step and you go straight down to rescue by others outside your group. So I think that when we talk about solo boating, the reason I'm such a fan of people not solo boating is because if they don't self-rescue, they lose the next step, which is rescue by others in your group.
Hmm.
I put a link to this video. This is a really cool video. The guy is really thoughtful and scientific, and I'm pretty sure he's correct about stuff. He says things in a really smart way. So anyway, if anybody wants to watch,
I think you
could
call that a curve.
It's is it really a curve, Dougie?
It fits some end points.
It's actually a slope. It's a slope.
It's a sloping line, but it okay. Yeah. Anyways,
doesn't a curve have to have a curve?
Not necessarily.
I think No, I don't think so. I think a curve is a, I mean, no, not, yeah. A curve in this sense is a, it fits to some points.
Okay. I, you know, I bet you though, it's not exactly a straight line though.
That is a linear fit.
Yes. I bet it's not a linear fit. I bet you that self-rescue is a little bit lower. I bet you it actually is more of a curve.
Right. Right.
If you drew it. It's not, or like maybe it's some sort of like function. Like it's not, it's like a, it's a polynomial that goes up and down a little bit. It doesn't follow an exact curve.
We could come up with some points. You need a lot of points to make that.
Yeah.
Graph.
But I think that's, we've been talking a lot about solo boating and about rescuing. And I really like this video. We're not going to watch it because it's just going to be weird. But I really like this a lot, this idea a lot.
It looks short though, like eight minutes. Is that what it is?
Yeah. And this channel, if I scroll up, do you see this channel, Skoldale Productions? Do you see that? Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a bunch of really cool videos about rescue and what's that word when you're trying to be safe? What's that topic for? I can't remember. But basically a lot of that stuff about safety. And like, he looks at a lot of incidents and sort of evaluates them for a number of things. So that's pretty cool. Here's a quick video, a quick comment about the skier. We're fine for low water on the main salmon. Was already in the Sowe at 3.7. Yeah, I mean, that's still Sowe at 3.7 is a lot of water. But I bet the Sowe at 2.7, it would be really hard. I think that my general topic is when you have the small boats and they're loaded down on shallow rivers, it's not going to work so well. Yeah, Mark, I think if I remember right, he told me he brought like a 5-gallon jug of alcohol or something. Risk management, Sean, thanks. That's what I was looking for, risk management. A lot of videos are risk management. Thanks, Sean. Well, let's get to the main topic of the show. And we brought John on. John, I met last week on a river trip. And I'm like, that guy's cool. I want to get to know him better. And I invited him on the show. And John is a physical therapist, kind of like Mark Rivers. And he's working on a PhD in performance psychology. And he is going to ask us some questions about guiding. And we're going to do our best to answer them. So I'm going to pass the show on to you, John. And you can just take over and we'll do our best.
Thanks a lot. When first noticed my cool patch that I got on a river trip last week with my buddy, and he gave me a hat, but not really. He just gave me a patch. I thought a hat would be cool, but a patch is almost as good. Yeah. So I taped it on there and I'm wearing it around with a lot of pride. So heck of a lot of fun on that river trip.
Wait, John, are you hinting that you want a hat?
I don't know. Maybe, Zach, if you got hats, I mean, hats are pretty cool.
We are working.
Patches are cool too, but.
We're working on a new hat, top-of-the-line hat, with a new special edition patch.
Really?
I will make a note to send you one.
Are you going to? Yeah, thank you.
They're not ready yet. They're still like, we had to order, because it's complicated, we had to order the thread to sew the patch on. It's a patch too, but it's a different patch on a hat. And we had to order special stuff. So it'll be ready in a week or two. I'm going to make a note. Hat to John.
Okay. And I don't think, I wouldn't design in the tape as part of your hat design. Just leave the tape off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'll just take this off for the minute. So everybody knows. So I was on a river trip last week, like you said, Zach, and I'm hanging out as kind of generally a customer, and I'm not an avid river rafter guy. I'm a guy who's been on a number of trips, including the Grand and the Snake and a couple others, but I don't do it a lot. So I really don't know the jam necessarily, but I do know a couple of things. And part of my interest is in watching people do what they do. I guess that's part of what you do when you consider how people perform. And perform not only means watching how Zach, you know, does this with the boat or how he sets up the tables or whatever, but it's also kind of how Zach interacted with his other guides. And I know he's a business owner, so I was paying attention to like how he's communicating and how he's leading and how he's modeling. And, you know, it's exhausting for me to be me. I'm just saying it's a lot of work. But at the same time, it's super interesting. My own research interest is in healthcare. So I'm interested in watching how healthcare providers interact with their patients, because I think the whole healthcare system is generally kind of effed up. And what we're trying to do is I'm trying to elucidate this idea that a great healthcare provider is not unlike a great guide. If you think about it, you guys are trying to navigate us from point A to put in safely to the end with a generally a good experience. Now, a good healthcare provider should be doing the same thing. So I take particular interest in how guides think about being guides. And I've never talked to a guide about being a guide, and this is the very first time. So that's why I weaseled my way into your show.
Thank you for being here. And I want to point out one thing. I'm mostly a rafting guide. That's what I've done most of my career is rafting, and generally like 1 to 6 day trips. Dougie is a Knowles instructor. So he's led like 30 day trips and sailing trips and different style of guiding that is a little bit more roughing it and leadership and education based. So you have two different types of guides, although Dougie's also a river guide as well.
Cool. Okay, good. So some of the questions I'm asking, and it's going to be from different perspectives, not just on, there's two general ideas that you guys want to do when you're rafting with customers and probably yourselves and whoever's with you, is you want to get down people down safely. That's number one. I can tell a lot of the conversations around that. And the second one is you want people to have a good time. Those things seem a little contradictory at times. I mean, you have to be attentive to one thing and you have to be attentive to another thing. How do you do that?
You prioritize safety.
Okay. I noticed that.
So sometimes people want to do things that aren't safe, that are fun, like jumping off a really big rock. And you're like, no, can't do that. And then they get mad and you go, yeah, you really can't do that. So you first say it in a nice way. You're like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it. Let's keep going. And then when they don't know, I really want to do it. Then you hurt that relationship by saying, no, you really, really can't do that. And then you bring them back a day or two later. Like you have to have the charisma, like stoke them out with something else later. Keep in the back of your head that, oh, I just made that person upset. And then do something else that stokes them out and then win them back with some charisma.
Okay. So charisma, that's kind of a cool word, big one, actually. So when you say charisma, what do you mean?
It should just be charming, be likable.
Okay. Likeable.
Yeah, I think people that are good looking have an advantage because people like good looking people. But also if you're good with words in a way that is, you know, if you're good at making people feel good about themselves, I think that's helpful. What do you think, Doug?
Yeah. I liked what you said about bringing it back a couple days later or sometime later, like remembering they want to do something and saying, hey, do you want to go jump off this rock over here? There's this thing today. And even doing that ahead of the first time they ask, which at Knowles we call that building rapport. So just kind of getting everybody super feeling support, that they feel supported by you. So they feel comfortable asking you to jump off the rock, but also you have a good relationship already, so you can say no to them and they'll feel comfortable with that too. Both okay. of those are good. I'm not as charismatic as Zach. Not many people are, but
I'll tell you that.
You can turn it on as a guide. I think you can definitely turn it on. And when you're out in front of people, you step it up and you have to be charismatic a little bit. And so, yeah, I agree with that too.
Yeah. So this rapport thing, how do you do that? How do you establish rapport? I mean, we try to do this training with healthcare providers. Like, you know, they're in for 15 minutes, sometimes more. We're trying to establish rapport because inside of rapport, generally from rapport evolves trust, which is a really important thing. But how do you guys, I watch how Zach did it, but Doug, how would you describe the process of establishing rapport?
I think it's a lot of one-on-one conversations and remembering things about a person. Okay. So, you know, if they tell you about their brothers or sisters, bring that up later and be like, I remember what you said about that. Or just lots of one-on-one conversations and respecting who they are, knowing who they are. So they learn to trust you.
Yeah.
That's how Doug does it. Cause he's a very thoughtful person. He's like a very thoughtful, caring person.
Mm-hmm.
Like ask about somebody and remember that detail. Cause that's just how he is as a person too.
Right. So sometimes this happens kind of naturally. Some people have a natural ability to kind of connect, right?
Right.
Now, so Zach, I know you do a lot of training with your guides. Mm-hmm. You know, you actually have a training course, as I understand, a training program. To what degree, how do you train rapport?
You don't.
Okay, that's interesting, right?
Yeah.
So the other, but yet it's an important performance variable in a guide is to be able to do it.
to build rapport between them and the guests. Yeah, but I think it's rapport between the guests and the trip leader at first.
Okay.
I think that's where the rapport really matters the most. It matters for everybody, but the trip leader was the one that's gonna be like, no, you can't jump off the rock. And so I think it's what we look for in guides before we have them trip lead. So it's not something we can like being able to build rapport is hard to train for. I just trying to think of how we would do that.
I mean, I think at your company, I think they learn it by seeing other people do it. So when they see you go down the river and building rapport with the clients, they're like, oh, that's clearly ending up well. He's able to talk to these people about safety stuff. And that's one way, just by example and role modeling.
Okay. I think
it's hard to do. It is.
It's hard. You were saying, it's funny, you were saying safety and professionalism really important, John. Or sorry, safety and fun, like trying to balance safety and fun.
Right.
One of the mottos internally to our guides is like safety, professionalism, and fun. Like okay. We want trips that are safe, they should be fun, and you need to be professionals. And you can build trust and rapport by coming off as a professional.
It's true.
And so I think that like showing a level of professionalism early means that the guests respect you as a professional. And then when you're like, hey, you can't jump off a rock, there's not like questioning it because they see you as a professional, that you're making a decision. If you don't come off as a professional, they'll keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And for me, like what I do to go back to the rapport to build it is like I try to be like I think if you're to meet when you meet the guides at first or the head guide, you're as a guest, you're probably like, oh, this person's probably like maybe super serious, or I'm not going to relate to them. There's like an anxiety you probably have about meeting the guests. And so I try to be empathetic to that as much as I can. And I try to come off as a goofball as much as I can, so I'm approachable and like build relationships. So we didn't do this on our trip, I don't think, but because our trip was unique because it was like we were doing a lot of unique stuff. And you guys, a lot of people knew each other already. But I'll do a talk and I'll say, introduce yourself and say your favorite Star Wars character.
Okay.
And that just shows that like I have like a nerdy side, and then I'm not just like Mr. Adventure, like, you know, I'm unapproachable, that like I'm kind of a nerdy normal person I think that people can relate to. So some of the ways I start the trip, I try to be instead of being like I'm in charge, I'm the guy, I'm like, this is our trip, I'm the leader, and I try to do things that make me open and approachable by like showing off, like or by demonstrating like a nerdy side or a what's the word? Sorry, sometimes I'm thinking about what words are.
Some of the words are personable. Yeah. Personable. It's not the professional, but it's the person. So it's the personable. Yeah. And the general thing, this is going to sound smarty pants a little bit, but you're not trying to impress people with the professionalism that you are, but you know that's important because there's an element of respect and trust. Yeah. But you're trying to be superhuman, human.
Human. Yeah.
Human. And that requires some level of vulnerability.
That's what I was looking for. Vulnerability. Yeah. Like present yourself as vulnerable in some way. Like
that's
like right. if you're new to trip leading or being the head guy or guide, you have this like imposter syndrome. You're trying to overcome it by being like, oh, I'm really cool. Once you've done it for a while and you've eased out, you realize that's a bad presentation. And the right presentation is to present yourself as vulnerable and not just super macho in charge.
Right. That generally, what that does is it generally enhances trust. You know, there's usually a barrier between a leader or a business owner or a medical provider or a doctor, or whatever, and the patient. And oftentimes what we're trying to do to improve the connection is to try to maintain or kind of manage the power dynamic a little bit. So it's not this authority person, but it's actually a person like me who I respect for what they know rather than some power play that they're the boss or they're the leader. Mm-hmm. So I get that. That makes sense to me. So what I'm interested in talking about is the degree to which you have an intentionality about that.
Oh, Doug, I'm very intentional about it.
Yeah. It seems like it. Doug, you mentioned it with some.
Yeah. Yeah. It's become a premise at Knowles about maybe 7 or 8 years ago, 10 years ago, they really decided that that was something they wanted instructors to focus on because they were seeing that it could have impact on student outcomes of just students staying in the field or students having a good time or able to learn. If you built this rapport early on and were able to use that as you're working with the students. That's right. I was going to say too, Zach, what do you think about part of professionalism, I think, is the rapport you have with your coworkers. Mm-hmm. And so when the clients, the customers see that, that's part of that professionalism too. And to me, that is huge. Seeing how guides work together and that they're helping each other, they're loading boats together, they're cooking together.
But that's not something, it's really hard to be intentional about that because you either have it or you don't. Like you can't force camaraderie or you can't force it. Hopefully we have all guides who get along with each other and that rapport is there, but you can't make that up.
Make what up?
The rapport among coworkers.
I don't know.
I would disagree. I don't know, Doug, what do you think?
Well, I'll let you talk too, but I was going to say, you don't have to like each other to have rapport necessarily.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I think that, okay. I see what you're saying. I think, let me rephrase this. It's not something I can intentionally like say, we're going to have rapport today. I can't wake up and say, I'm going to have really good rapport so that we run a better trip. Cause sometimes like it just isn't there. You're not vibing with other guides and you can't, it's hard to fake, you know, it's hard to be like, hey, we're going to look really good and happy today. I can't be intentional about having a rapport. It's either there or it's not. And so, you know, like the trip I did with John, Thomas and I worked together forever. We get along super well. Like he's a very easy guy to have rapport with. Right. So that was natural. And then our other guy, Tate, it was the first trip I'd ever done with her. And so I was hoping it would be there. And like, while we were loading the trip, I'm like, oh, it's there. This is going to be easy. But, and then part of what I did, when I met Tate for the trip, I was like, hey, we never worked together, but you should know I'm super annoying to work with. I'm going to like change the plan. I'm not going to do the trips. They're how they normally run. Like a lot of guys get annoyed because I show up and try to do these complicated logistics things. And I want to set the expectation that you're going to be annoyed with me and that's okay. And she's like, no, it's good to know that though. And so like, for me, that's how I tried to hopefully not ruin rapport. Cause I'll come into a trip if I haven't guided with a crew and do things that annoy them. And that rapport goes away.
They know that you're annoyed with them.
They're annoyed with me.
Oh, they are. Because okay.
I will show up after never meeting them and say, hey, we're going to have lunch here. And they're going to look at each other and say, why is Zach making us have lunch at this stupid place?
Right.
And I lose the rapport. They're like behind the scenes, like annoyed with me. That happens, you know, happens sometimes. And so I'm very conscientious of like, I want to run the trip a certain way, but if I do it sometimes a certain way, I will lose my rapport with the crew.
Yeah.
So I have to balance those things.
So how do you mitigate that though? How do you get in front of it? And you already said it. So I'm going to keep challenging this idea that you can't be intentional about it. But if you go to Tate ahead of time and say, hey, let me tell you a little bit about me. And there's another dynamic there, you know, Tate knows that you're the boss man, like the boss of boss mans. So it's like, if all of a sudden, you know, my boss walked in and he was on a trip and I was like, oh man, the boss is here. I got to like, so you're still doing something to try to ease. I would say calm whatever anxiety exists by communicating some stuff, you know, tell them a little bit about you. So, and how you run things and how you plan to, so that you can drop the idea that they're going to have to guess or interpret what you mean or how you say it. All of those things contribute to better performance generally. And it's a concept called psychological safety, you know, the ability to kind of go, hey, man, why are you thinking that? It's not like they're challenging you, but that's a form of the safety. It's like, I'm going to question why you're doing what you're doing, not to offend you or challenge you, but rather just to better understand and learn. And you can create that environment. I actually watched you create that environment. So whether you do it intentionally or not, I'm not sure.
I've just learned that I made a lot of mistakes in the past. I've had a lot of not rapport with guides. And I'm like, how do I fix that? How do I fix that? How do I fix that? How do I get ahead of that now? So it's in the back of my head, I guess, now that I mention it, to like make sure that if I lose that rapport, it's not good.
No, frankly, everyone would feel it on the trip. I mean, we would notice there was a rift between the guides. I mean, it's got to be standing out like a bad rock or something. Like a bad rock. Is that a guide thing you say?
No, but maybe it would become one.
Yeah, right. So Brent made a comment. I talking about the disc model.
Yeah.
Barrett, you're onto something. That's a That's a concept that a lot of organizations use, a lot of leaders use, and try to understand how people kind of approach their situation, right? Some are this way, some are this way, some are this way, dominant, steady, whatever. And oftentimes teams are intentional about trying to understand how other people see and understand the reality, not unlike what this DISC does. I use the Enneagram, there's Myers-Briggs, there's a bunch of other stuff out there, just so that people can be have a sense of their more of a compatibility. So I just want to highlight that was a good comment. Now, go ahead, Doug, sorry.
No, I'd never heard of that before. That makes sense.
I mean, yeah. This is simple. It's only four. Like, I know what Myers-Briggs was, and there's a lot of different, like, you're like, oh, you're an INTP. Like, what does that even, like, you have to know a lot of stuff. Like, if right. Dougie told me he was, like, an ENPR or whatever, I would know what that meant. Where if you used to use the word dominant, influential, like, this person's steady, I'd be like, oh, I know what that means. I like how simple this is.
Yeah. And I guess I would, you know, kind of the premise of a lot of this stuff right now is in the concept of relationship. You know, there's a relationship between the guide and the client or the person being guided. And there's also a relationship between the guides themselves. And in collaboration, they're providing a relationship with the entire trip. So these relational dynamics are super interesting for geeks. And I mean geek. And you're a geek about gear, and I watch some of these things. I'm like, what? But I'm kind of a geek about this stuff. So I'm just super curious on how you guys think about it. Cause I had a great experience, and I pay attention to these things, but it was a lot of fun watching you interact with younger colleagues. Thomas, for sure. I got that, but Tate for sure. And when she was in the boat and you were not, I mean, there's no question she was gunning for higher performance. She really wanted to do well. Mm-hmm. And that's the best concept of, you know, the best someone wanting to do well, who wants to perform really well. I mean, that's an inspired process, not something that we can take for granted sometimes. Yeah. So you gotta tell me. Now this, I think it's the most world famous safety talk. Is that how you framed it?
Oh, my world famous safety talk. Yeah. I mean, actually, and that was not one. I mean, that was a rough safety talk for me. I struggled with it because it's interesting because a lot of people on this trip were experienced guides. A lot of our guests were experienced guides, have been on many trips. There was a lot of experience. And so
that's right.
It's something I have to give, but I definitely feel like I was being judged. I mean, I've given hundreds of these talks and I'm really comfortable doing them, but when there's that much experience on a trip and that many people who at the certain level of where they at in terms of how to explain this. I don't want to talk about the trip too much, but like there was a lot of people I respected there and I didn't want to make a mistake. And so I was like, oh man, I got to give this talk. And I halfway through, I'm like, oh man, I'm not coming off as professional as I want to come off, as like dialed as I want to come off. So I had to overcome that later, just giving you some like background on my thinking. But I say safety talks are something people don't necessarily want to hear. Like, oh, the safety talk, blah, blah, blah. And so I introduced it as like my world famous safety talk to hopefully create some enthusiasm for it. Like, oh, guys, come on over and do the world famous safety talk, just to like helpfully like make it seem exciting and there's something special there.
Yeah.
And then I usually end it, if I do a good job, I'm like, hey, guys, you can do a standing ovation if you want. And then they do, and it's funny. But,
okay, so what I hear you saying is that you use humor, like as a way in this balance of professionalism and relationship, connectability, rapport, you use humor as kind of a key element to get people feeling comfortable.
Yeah, I would say enthusiasm over humor.
Okay, enthusiasm.
I was like, hey, guys, world famous heavy talk. It's not that funny, but come on over. I'm super excited about it.
That's right.
And then they have that vibe. They're coming off like, oh, we can't wait to see what this is. And it just feeds off each other.
Yeah,
you know,
great expectation.
Yeah,
Doug, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's hard to do. What he said is, because you're embarrassed, you're putting yourself out there. Like it seems like you almost had some imposter syndrome last week when you were doing that talk.
Yeah.
Like, worried about what these people are thinking.
We had cameras rolling on them too.
Yeah. Plus there were cameras that too.
Yeah. So, yeah, all those are true things that we all feel, and we perform better when those aren't there. So. That's the hard thing for me is to figure out how to, even with that there, like you said, be funny if you can. And Treat it as a joke. Be personable.
I mean, yeah. There's a humor with at the safety talk. There's a humor balance. You don't want to be too funny because it is safety.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a thing. Like you have to make. I think too many jokes take away from the safety aspect of it. I just thought of something else interesting. In a safety talk, I chose not to talk about flips. You know, I want to keep it short because people knew what they were doing.
Right.
And we're in the sun. It wasn't the best place to do a safety talk. People didn't want this to go on forever. Flips takes a few minutes. When you talk about flips, you're mainly talking about like getting out from underneath the boat. So I chose to skip it. And it's a risk management thing. Like, and the odds of a flip on this trip were like exceptionally low. But somebody who was a former guide midway through was like, you forgot to talk about flips, Zach. And that definitely like, I had to like mentally be like, oh man, I'm being judged. And I have to go into this thing to make the talk longer. I don't want to go into that. Definitely like I struggled there for a minute. I was like, all right,
how did you get back on point? What did you do in your head?
These talks so many times. It's just the talk itself is second nature.
Okay.
So luckily it's just experience. I just like, all right, let's just get into that rhythm. But I was like, this person is judging me and probably thinks I'm not a very good guide because I missed something. That was hard, but I'm like, it matters, you know, in the Grand Canyon potentially, but on the Rogue with like really competent guides, a flip is something that happens once a season at most.
I remember the question.
Yeah.
And I remember because you have a stride when you're doing this thing.
Yeah.
And by the way, for everyone who's listening, the guy's crawling on the ground. He's crawling into rafts. I mean, it is a full body experience watching this guy teach a safety talk, which I thought was pretty darn cool, all things considered.
It's I call it a demonstration, actually. Like, it's not about the words as much as the showing how to do things.
I saw it. So how do you know if people are on point? I mean, what are your cues to determine whether people are actually paying attention?
I used to be a teacher, so I can kind of tell, but also
kind of tell how,
just by like eye contact or if they're distracted, body language. But, okay. I'll do a quiz at the end. I'm sure we did a quiz on yours. Hey, what are the important things we talked about? You know, wear your PFD, make it tight, keep your shoes on. Like the quiz at the end, it checks, the people got what I said, but also everybody hears that stuff again. That's really important.
Uh-huh. Cool. Great comment by, JD Roji. I'm not sure if I'm saying that. The spot on with the hiring. We actually talked about this, Zach, because I asked you a question, you know, how do you, if you're going to assemble a team or you're going to hire and you're a business owner, you know, you have a fair number of employees. When you hire somebody, what kind of characteristics are you looking for?
Empathy and judgment are two big ones.
Judgment. What do you mean by judgment?
Just good judgment. Making good decisions.
Sound decision making.
I made a decision, a judgment decision to not talk about flips in effort to like keep it from standing in the sun too long and just like losing them. And that's a judgment. And so be able to make judgment calls like that, like whether a certain rock is safe to jump off or not. Like, so some people have good judgment and some people don't, and you can't train that.
Okay.
How do you assess that in an interview, or do you make sure does everybody have to come out and do at least one AB before you hire them?
Yeah, generally, but I'm not there. I don't know. I can just kind of tell. And I know that's hard to say, but like when I interview somebody, there's just a vibe people give off, whether they're responsible people or not. I think, let me give a different word, intention, that they're there for the right reasons.
And how do you determine that? I mean, what questions you ask? And it's not about putting you on the spot because there's really no right answer. It's just about when you say, I just have a sense of it. The only question I ask is, well, what sense? I mean, what are you watching?
I mean, the questions I ask are, why do you want to be a guide? Why do you want to work for us?
Okay.
Things like that. Okay. The big one is like, why do you want to work for us? And then hearing if they understand what we're about and hearing what they have to say. So like, and I can just tell like, and then I have them ask me questions at the end and I write down what they asked me while I'm doing it, because like questions like, how much is the pay? How many trips will I get? Like those are good questions to ask, of course, but they tell me their intention is to make money over being a guide. So questions like, do you provide ongoing training? That's a good question. I don't know, just like questions about like the guests. Are they guests? You can also tell in the email people send, the first email, a lot of times, like, why they want to be there. They want to be there because they love a place.
Right.
And they want to share with people, or they want to be there to have fun and make some money.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not bad to have fun and make some money, but better guides love a place and want to share it.
Okay. I got that. And now that makes sense to me. So there are a lot of, this is there back to what the comment here. I don't know how to say that. JD.
We can never pronounce people's anyway, YouTube names.
And the next one, the next comment is actually really good too, because, you know, once you hire a team, and they say one of the most important things that a business owner does is hire. I mean, if you hire the right people, it's easier to get some of the better performance. But that doesn't mean that, and some would say, and I heard you just kind of say it too, you can't train some of this stuff. And, you know, I would challenge it in some ways, but it sounds like others actually spend time teaching communication, like teaching rapport, teaching what kind of things to pay attention to, because part of your experience and part of what you're modeling is how you're paying attention to what people do. And how you interpret that and how you communicate that with your colleagues is, I would say, equally as important to the experience as, you know, tying up the boat properly.
I think, as I think about this, I struggle teaching. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know how to teach judgment. I don't know how to teach rapport. I don't know how to teach intention. I don't know how to teach being empathetic.
Right.
I can explain that that's important, but I know how to teach how to tie up a boat, how to get a boat down the water. Okay. How to set up a tent, how to make dinner, like that stuff, almost anybody can learn. Right. But teaching, we can teach and anybody can learn the technical stuff. It's interacting with people in a respectful way, and being a real guide. That's hard to teach. And I think that's the thing, is like a guide is somebody who guides people down a river and do a wild place. It's not. It's more about how they share the place with people and less about how they maneuver the boat. So I put a lot of emphasis on people, because we do overnight trips, on like guiding people through a place, hoping that getting the boat down the river, they'll learn. Well, they'll get that too.
Yeah.
That makes kind of amazing. But I have a hard time. Those things are hard to teach. But
Dougie said this earlier, though. He goes, well, a lot of the teaching you do is modeling, right? And it's cool if you're there and modeling it. Sometimes you can put words to it. Not everybody can. But, yeah, soft skills, what? Mm-hmm. And I would throw down on that all day. I'd say, you know, there are hard skills. And same thing in medicine. There are hard skills and technical skills that we have to be really good at. And then somehow this idea that the communication skills are soft skills. I just wrote a blog on this, and I'm telling you, they're not soft skills. They're power skills. We just, let's just start changing it right now on this show, which is worldwide distribution. We know there's 30,000 people watching this episode, which is cool, Zach. Not many people have accomplished the notoriety that this show has, but we're now going to call them power skills, because when this part of the training, you know, becomes more intentional, my suspicion is that people generally feel safer, more engaged, generally have a good time. And again, I've never been on a bad river trip, but I've only gone on three, I think. So it's not like that great. But generally people who seem to get into this industry are those who are interested in doing and they love what they do. It's not like, oh, I got to show up and do a job.
It's everybody. I think there's a variety of people who would get in this industry, actually.
Yeah. To what degree, and back to the comment earlier, to what degree do you sense that your guides, if you're guiding with them, that they would tell you, dude, you're messing this up, or I disagree with you? To what degree do they feel safe challenging you?
I have no idea. I think I know what it is. That's not real.
No, think so? Do you think it's more on the absolutely yes, because you're explicit about it, or is it because I have no idea and I'm not paying attention?
I think some people will challenge me because I know them.
Okay.
I've spent a long time with them, and some people are afraid to.
Okay.
I don't know them that well. Like, they're new. They don't know me that well. Okay. They don't feel comfortable. But I think I've been challenged a lot by guides over my years, and I've learned a lot from that. Like, they're like, hey, you're being a dummy. I'm like, oh, maybe I am.
Okay.
But I'd say, I don't actually know. I have no idea.
No, that's cool. No, sometimes we're, sometimes organizations really focus on this idea, like, you know what, let's make sure we create this, this flat, so to speak, organization. You know, the organization is, they're not afraid. It's psychological safety. It's a concept that's common. So
I hope they're comfortable. I mean, that's interesting because we have, I have an online training, and in the training we talk about flat hierarchy versus hierarchical.
Yeah, that's right.
Hierarchical. It's in our online training course that we've built for our new guides. And I say our goal is flat, but it's really hard to get there. So we're somewhere in between.
Do you know why it's hard to get there? What makes it hard, I should say.
Is it, I think it's just because people like to have hierarchy. People like to have like a structure, but I think it takes a lot of trust and it takes a long time to build that trust. If I've had guides who all work for me for like 10 years, it would be easy. But when I bring in a few new people every year, it takes time to get towards that.
Okay. Doug, what do you think? How long do you think it takes?
Yeah, I would echo what Zach said. I know that he had a lot of people leave last year for various reasons, and people typically stick around that company for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I just did a trip as well a couple of weeks ago, and we had several new guys, and I was very impressed with the hiring. And I told him and Courtney that, and then Michael too, that they did a great job choosing people that fit well with the company. And that trip, yeah, it felt very hierarchical, even though it was definitely all levels. So they did a good job presenting it as, sorry, it didn't feel hierarchical. It felt fairly flat.
Got it.
They did a good job presenting it as fairly flat. Definitely one of them was in charge of everything and talking to the guests a lot, but they did a great job. I want to go back to judgment as well. It's definitely an interesting thing. I don't think it's that easy to teach. I think you learn it kind of on your own through doing experiences and reflecting on it. Yeah. So I think that's what I would say. If you're trying to teach judgment, just teach people how to reflect on it and maybe do some debriefs.
Yeah,
I think that's a good way to work on that judgment.
Absolutely. And the reflection part is the key part.
Yeah.
It's like, cause you know, it's almost like you have to make mistakes in order to actually truly learn.
Yeah.
Which is, you know,
unfortunately, that's the case.
Unfortunately, that's the case, you know, and if you want to teach somebody how to do a wheelie on a wheelchair because you have to teach patients how to do it, for example, you literally have to fall over backwards in order to get the fear out of the system. And then I don't know if you've ever flipped boats on people. I mean, do you put them in situations where they have to truly kind of experience and navigate it? I'm just curious from a training perspective.
Oh, they have to practice flipping boats.
Okay.
For sure. But I don't force them to do it in the middle of a rapid.
Okay.
And like, not go as a surprise. Like they're prepared for it.
Yeah.
Out of the blue. Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, people I hire, ideally they've worked day trips somewhere where they've seen flips and wraps and things go wrong. Mm-hmm. So they've seen the mistakes happen somewhere else and they bring that experience to us. Right. Right. So I love guides who have like class 4 day trip experience because that's not something I want their first flip or wrap to happen on one of our trips.
Right.
So I really value that experience that they get somewhere else.
Yep. And I saw you too. You use some drone footage and you actually mapped this out in one of your videos. I watched a couple of them and you actually kind of diagrammed it out. And then also when you're up and you're actually, what's it called? When you're spotting the thing,
scouting.
You're scouting the rapid. You kind of, you guys talk it out loud, right?
When we're physically there.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Hey, I'm gonna go back to one thing really quick.
Yep.
This is really interesting to me to think about. I've never thought about it this way. How does this work in the hospital environment?
How does what work?
The modeling. Like I can picture, I guess for me, modeling would be like doing the type of like modeling the behavior I want in other guides. And they hopefully see that and do that. I've thought about this a little bit. I didn't realize how important it was, but how does modeling work in the hospital environment?
Two ways. One is there's generally increasingly so. This is going to sound a little wonky, but just hang with me. So it's like, you know, in any kind of learning process, people have to make sense of what they see. And to make sense, actually to learn something, you almost have to have a language for it. You can have an intuition about it, but it's really helpful to have, this is what I'm doing, and this is how I label it. When you have a label of a skill, for example, then you can start to put a bunch of experience and context around it. People can go, oh, I know what it means to do this, because that's what that is, that skill, whatever that skill is. So soft skills have often been treated as just something innate, like somebody has it or somebody don't, like they don't got it or they don't have it. It's increasingly now, the research is really getting clear and saying you can teach people how to talk and to recognize language patterns and to notice that your certain facial experience is going to have a difference or make a difference in the patient experience. And so right now what we're doing is we're teaching these kind of experiences because this communication is such an integral part of the healthcare experience. Now we're probably river guiding probably isn't as critical in that because you guys are innately generally pretty good at it already. And there's so many other things to focus on, but to kind of answer your question, there is a didactic portion where we actually teach people these kind of skills. And then on the other side, of course, you have to experience them. You have to see what it feels like to communicate with a patient who's crying, for example, because they're really sad because something really bad happened. But you have to manage those kind of emotions. Now, emotion management, emotion regulation is one of the hottest topics in performance. So if you're the lead guy, for example, and you have two guides that are with you and something really goes wrong or somebody does something really bad and you're pissed off, what do you do with that? How do you swallow that down? What's your strategy for transitioning that? Because you know you can't just float that out there.
I was given some advice by one of my mentors, who said if something bothers you on a river trip, don't say anything at the time. Don't say anything.
Okay. Yep.
If you go home and lose sleep over it, then call the guide after the trip and talk to him.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's interesting advice. Like there's certain things you have to address, especially if it's safety related. Mm-hmm. But I think about that a lot. Like, I mean, when I'm on trips, I can nitpick everything everywhere. Right. I can nitpick everywhere. I'm like, but these are the detail of the detail of stuff.
Yep.
But if I haven't trained the crew at that point to do a good job, that's my fault. And if there's a mistake on the trip, I can't just get pissed at them and like make it worse or okay. Say something and make them insecure. Yeah. Let it go. And then his thing is don't just talk, like only talk about the trip if you lose sleep over it.
Right.
And that's that's hard to do.
That's an interesting concept because then it's lingering out there and it's important.
If it really bothers you.
Okay.
Good. That's advice I try to follow.
So you regulate or you manage your emotions by what we call reframing it. In other words, you have a context, you've made an agreement with yourself that you're just going to kind of stuff it, which means you're probably pretty good at doing that until you can't. And then you got to bring it up.
And it's my fault.
Yeah.
Whatever they did is my fault. I hired the wrong person.
Okay,
trained them incorrectly. Like instead of getting mad at them, I'm like, actually, this is my fault.
Got it. That's the reframe. Yeah, it's perfect. Zach asked my background because I'm reading these comments. This is cool.
It's really cool. Huh?
I'm studying performance psychology, Zach. That's why, I'm sorry. Zach. Huh. Zach. And that's why it freaked me out. And that's my interest. And so I was on a river trip. I'm actually a physical therapist and a part-time sound guy.
A high-level part-time sound guy.
Hi, and like, I look like I know what I'm doing, right?
You definitely knew what you were doing. It took me a while to realize. I mean, you came off as like a very like a career sound guy. I'm like, oh, this is just one of your hobbies.
That's right. I am. It is. Oh, hobby's not the right word, but maybe.
It's just one of the many things you do.
Yep. Right.
Zach, can you think of a time where you couldn't wait until the end of the trip? It was something on your mind or safety related where you
had to bring it up. Yeah. Hey, it's not fun for me because it's like, I'm on a trip. I have to be a trip leader and a guide and an owner. I have a lot of responsibilities and to pull somebody aside and be like, hey, by the way, don't do this. It's just like, it's not fun for me.
Do you treat how do you approach the conversation? Is it a conversation or is it more of a, let me just give you some feedback and then we're going to drop this?
Sometimes I'll just be like, I'll just look at them and don't do that again. And it's just us. No. Usually it's like, I'll make it just really quick. Like, hey, yesterday when you, and there's accidents, which I probably, like, they accidentally made a mistake, which I don't try to address because it's an accident. It wasn't a purposeful thing. Like, hey, by the way, you accidentally flipped yesterday. There's no reason to drag them through the mud on that. But then there's something like, they tied the boat up in a way where it's rubbing on rocks and can put a hole in the boat. So I'm like, hey, maybe I'll get everybody together. Like, hey guys, just want to, you know, let you know that, like, when we tie our boats up, we need to put some padding on it or tie them up differently because that could put a hole in it.
Yeah.
So I'll try to keep that pretty short. That happened this spring. Mm-hmm. If I bring it back for the trip and a boat pops the next day, that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Or like if there's like somebody who's swearing, like there's a little bit of swearing is okay, but there's just like an issue. Like, hey, please tone down the language. Like something simple like that.
So you have the ability to be pretty direct. That was my observation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And just, you're not asking.
No, I don't have the ability to not be direct. That's the thing. I can only be direct. I don't have the option of being like, well, so maybe you shouldn't maybe swear because I don't know. It's not good. Like, I'm just like, hey, just don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have that other ability.
You might. And this is, again, this is just off the cuff. This is stuff I pay attention to. And sometimes a way to kind of defuse the defensiveness that may pop up, it may or may not. But sometimes it's like, hey, man, can I give you some feedback?
Oh, I'll tell you what, though. When people say that to me, I get mad.
Really? Tell me.
I do, because of Dougie. Oh,
Dougie, you're going to just, how does that work? Tell me about Dougie.
It's such a Knowles thing, right? I just know that people like Doug who went through a Knowles background. Do you know what Knowles is, John?
No idea.
Okay. Do you want to explain Knowles really quick, Fresh?
Yeah. Leadership, education, and wilderness education. So it's these typically students that are like 17 years old to 21.
Cool.
And they're coming on a trip for typically a month. But it could be 2 weeks to 3 months, somewhere in there. Even a year program that we have, 6 months.
Wow.
But they're coming out there to kind of, the reason they signed up is to get out in the wilderness. It might be a gap year during school. They get college credit or something after high school or during high school, summer.
Yeah.
To get out there in the wilderness, learn some wilderness skills, and then also learn communication and leadership and things like that. Conflict resolution. We cover that. Wow. So the stuff you're talking about. So that's why it's longer, 30 days.
Yeah.
Or 2 weeks.
They need time for a conflict to happen.
Yeah. Well, so, but it does, like what Zach said about wait till after the trip. And if it's still on your mind, then bring it up. You don't have that luxury as much because they're there to learn. So you actually have to practice giving them feedback, and that's what they're paying for.
Right.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And you are there for a long time. So, you know, there's the stages of group development. Have you heard of that before?
Yeah.
So there's this calm period, but then eventually there's some storming phases that are going to happen. So that's what you work with. And that's why they're out there. Yeah.
So Zach, why are you afraid of Doug?
Oh, so, I mean, I know I've learned all these tricks. I think everybody knows these tricks, right? Like, can I give you some feedback? I just throw up my mouth when I hear that. Just give me the feedback. Like, don't ask permission to give me feedback. Or am I going to say no? Do you ever say, can I give you some feedback? And no, I'm good. Like, that's just like a trick to give the feedback.
Right.
Or the happiness sandwich, whatever you call it, Freshie, where it's like, hey, I noticed today you made a really good sandwich, but you did mess up on the river. But I want to finish up by saying you have a really nice haircut. I see through it. They just want to give, they want to get something off their mind. And so I think that people who've been guiding for a long time, and I could be projecting that people see through these things and are annoyed by them. That's just my opinion.
I would say it's not something to be seen through necessarily. Like, that statement is there because it's not just a funny thing you're about to say. It's something that actually meant something to you. It was kind of important. You're going to a place that's vulnerable. Okay.
How about saying, hey, Doug, I'm going to give you some feedback.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, can I give you feedback? Because the can I give you feedback is like, I can't say no to this. You're asking me a question. Like, I guess you could say no to it.
You could say no.
People do say no sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not a good time right now. I'm a little overwhelmed with something that happened.
Not a good time.
Yeah. But when I get this shit sandwich, I'm like, the two good things to me are like, you're like, obviously they're playing me with a shit sandwich. Obviously they should have just said the nice thing. So I would reframe this. I would change this to make this better. And actually Courtney and I were talking about this yesterday. I'm gonna give you my opinion how this should be done. And I know that you guys probably think I'm an idiot because this is how things are done. And you guys are like studied this stuff and have science behind it. But I'm going to say that like, you should be, when somebody does something good, you, and it's in your brain, you should say that was really good. All everywhere you go, you're like, that was really good. That was really good. That was really good. But you don't say it.
Zach, so you're speaking nulls right now though. That's the 7-1 that you heard.
So it's a 7-1, but the problem is nobody does the first six. Or when they know they have the one, like, oh, I got to say six good things now. Like you have to live in a world where you're continually giving everybody positive feedback. Like, man, nice job tying that knot. Great job backing up the trailer. Dougie, your hair looks nice today. You know, you have to like be continually giving the positive feedback. So the one time you're like, dude, like tie that boat up better.
Okay.
You don't have to do it as like, can I give you feedback? They're so happy because they've seen you give so much positive feedback that you can then give that one piece of thing back in a very direct and sincere way, because the shit sandwich is not sincere. The whole like, hey, Dougie, you have nice glasses, but your shirt's dirty. But of course, you did a good job vacuuming today. That's not sincere.
I would say, okay, so that's the reason for that positive feedback is not just to make a sandwich out of it. The reason for those 7-1 or the shit sandwich is to point out something that you want the person to keep doing.
But you can't do it. My point is, you guys, I totally get if you guys think I'm an idiot. I'm totally fine.
I'm
just expressing my opinion. You can't give the positives at the same time you give the negative. You have to make the negative work to be able to be good at giving feedback.
Yeah.
You have to be giving positive feedback naturally and authentically all the time.
And what does that achieve? By doing that, what does that achieve?
Rapport and trust and then knowing.
Yeah, rapport and trust. And all those. Yeah.
I think what happens is, We see things we like all the time. We just don't take the time to point out those things. And right. So I've learned to very consciously, when I see something good, point it out. And not as a trick, not as like, oh, I'm going to get my six and I can say a negative. But also like when people hear the good things they're doing, others hear that too. And they're like, oh, good, that is what a good looks like. And so I think I'm of a point to where like, feedback is all about positive.
Yeah.
And not about negative. And I was telling Courtney yesterday, I'm like, if I can go the whole season and only give positive feedback, that's a massive win.
Yeah, totally.
Like that would be my goal, like to give positive feedback all summer and to not have to like say, hey, do this differently.
But how do people learn if you don't give them feedback that's contrary to the expectation of what you want them to do?
I don't know. It's a good question.
You ask them, can I give you feedback?
Oh, like this be cringe. Anybody walks up to me, I'll tell you that up to me. If John, if you walk, I love you, man. You're an awesome guy. If you walked up to me and gave me, can I give you feedback? I would cringe inside a little bit. Like, oh, God, I know what's coming.
What's coming? You know what's coming.
Something's coming. Like, hey, I think you can do this better.
So you're saying, I think Zach, what you're saying is that, dude, give it to me straight. Don't candy coat it.
Yeah, yeah. Don't
candy coat it. I'm doing something not quite right. But, and so how many people in the world, how many people walk the world thinking that way? Like
I'm assuming everybody, because everybody's like you. So you like, I assume everybody thinks the way I do, which is a bad assumption, but,
it's just inaccurate assumption. I mean, it's assumption, it's yours, but it's probably not accurate.
Yeah. So I think you're right that, but you'll never catch me saying, can I give you feedback? Okay. Would I say that? Okay, I don't know. Maybe
you never say that to me.
I got to think about it now. I would say it to you, Freshie, just to like be funny. Freshie, let me give you some feedback. I think, when I hear those words, cause I get a lot of feedback, John, and not from guides, from guests.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, like, oh, I get this a lot. Can I give you some feedback? Can I give you some feedback? I hear it a lot. And so, like, here we go. And so like, I'm not a fan. I'll tell you the other thing shoot.
That's funny.
I thought something else, but I forgot what it was. Something to do with giving feedback
from clients who they preface it sometimes. Hey, can I give you some feedback?
I hear it enough, and it's stuff like hey, this is a great trip, but the coffee was cold this morning. I'm like, oh man, yeah, we messed up. Like, actually, John, the first day of our trip, I made terrible coffee.
I know,
it was awful. Nobody was like, hey, Zach, let me give you some feedback.
No, I was afraid to give you feedback.
But
I didn't want you to sink me in the river.
I knew it was bad, and I recalculated and moved on. I gave myself feedback.
Oh, that's cool. You gave yourself feedback.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what the expectations. My question was, is this going to be a bad coffee trip? I wasn't sure.
It shouldn't be. Well, you brought that super special coffee maker, which is it in here? The French press thing.
No, what is it called? It's called the
detonator.
The detonator. Has everyone seen this thing? This thing is the, I'm going to say it's the bomb. It's, get it?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. It's a detonator.
I thought it was funny. Anyway, it looks like a plunger, like you're detonating it. And then you have to yell what?
Fire in the hole.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was one of the most memorable parts of the trip.
Yeah. The problem is that I put the wrong amount of coffee in it. And so twice. One time I did it the first morning, and I'm like, this isn't very good. And I did it again the last morning, I think. And it was so bad, I threw the coffee away and made a second pot. I'm like, we're not doing that again.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what I do sometimes. I'm just to hear what you guys think. Sometimes, like, I'm not in a mood for feedback. Like, I'm working really hard, and I'll just tell the guides, like, you guys may have feedback for me, but honestly, I don't want to hear it.
Classic. That's perfect.
Good self-awareness too.
That's perfect, dude. Actually, that's the stuff I'm super curious about, is to the degree to which you have a self-awareness that you're ready for constructive or positive or anything. It's just like, hey man, it's not a good time.
Yeah. I thought the trip went well. I'm not in a mood for feedback. Like, if you have feedback for me, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be pretty direct. But sometimes I'm like chill and relaxed, and I'm like, hey guys, like I'm trying to get better right now. Like, if you guys can think of anything, like, you can tell me now or pull me aside later. So I also like preface times when I'm like really in the mood or really not in the mood for it, because sometimes it's like the last thing I need to hear is like somebody's like, well, I really feel like you should have packed more Band-Aids. Like, that would just send me over the edge. Just some little tiny thing, you know, just the way you shut the garage door wasn't quite right. I'm like, this is like, we ran a trip of a lifetime and made, right. You know, and one little thing that didn't matter annoyed somebody.
There's a saying that we say, is it a difference that makes a difference sometimes?
Okay.
So
that's actually really cool.
How big is your issue? Yeah. Kind of, is it for you or is it for the other person too? Like, if it's just something that you are upset about, that's not something you have to give feedback about.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't really impact. It's just for you. But if that feedback, I think what we're talking about is feedback that Zach wants somebody to change, or that we think, or that he thinks that would improve them.
I mean, sometimes it's feedback and sometimes it's training.
Right.
So like for me, training would be like, hey, that this boat rubber. Hey guys, you may not have ever learned this, but when the water's high, boats rub and they pop. So this is just training. So sometimes it's like, hey, I'm educating you guys. It's not like feedback. So the feedback would be like, hey, you're swearing a little bit too much. Let's kind of tone down the swearing. You know, things like that. I think Barrett and I are on the same page.
Yeah.
I recognize that not everybody's like me and Barrett, but I think Barrett and I like feel the same way.
So is it the idea that you're criticism averse?
No, I just, I can't, I just want to, I want to, I feel like the, can I give you feedback is like, it's, I think it's like a tool, and I'm being treated like, I'm not being talked to like man to man. It's like, let me approach your fragile ego with this. Can I give you some feedback thing? Or let me give you a shit sandwich. Like I want to be talked to as a peer. Like, just like, let's just have a talk about it. Just come tell me like, hey dude, somebody did bother me. I just want to get off my chest. I mean, I think the right way to approach feedback is more like explaining how it affects you. Like, hey, there's this thing you did on day three. It made me feel this way. Here's why it made me feel this way. Yeah. And I wanted to share this with you.
Yeah. That's right? Classic. That's a textbook way of doing it. Hey man, this happened. I feel this. I want to let you know. And then you have a chance to respond. I mean, that's the whole opportunity is to create this opportunity for people to respond.
And you can't disagree with how something makes people feel. Like, they made me feel this way. You did something that made me feel this way. You could say, you can't say you shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't feel, no, it actually made me feel this way. I want to express it. I think what Barrett and I think is like, it's a, it, nobody's ever asked, can I give you some feedback, and sincerely gave a compliment without a pen. I think Enzo was saying, I can't understand what he says, but I feel like, can I give you some feedback ends with criticism and doesn't end with feedback.
And so the operative word is criticism. Like, what is criticism? What does that mean to you that people are giving a criticism? Does that ping up against something important to you, or what's
probably,
the...
Yeah. Okay. I'm probably very sensitive to criticism. Actually, my wife would say that.
Okay.
Well, it's true.
Yeah. And that's not uncommon. And, you know, again, everyone's human. So everyone, the best part about getting better at your craft or being a leader or anything is kind of learning about this kind of process and how we do this communication well or not well, and what works and what doesn't work. And what my observation, Zach, what you do with your team, though, is you're pretty explicit about how you communicate. You say it. The more you can say, guys, sometimes I don't want any feedback right now, or I don't want any criticism. I do want feedback, but I'm not interested in criticism right now. And there's something important about that. And as long as people know and can respect it, it's good. But overall, for an organization, the more this kind of open criticism happens, generally the better. That is amazing.
Sorry, I'm listening, but I also brought this up.
Yeah, for good reason. That's much more interesting.
I think we had the medium-sized one.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that tall one, John.
Dude, it's a detonator. That's like,
yep.
It's the bomb.
Can I give this company some feedback right now? Yeah. My feedback was kill the Land Grove coffee thing. Like, it's too much branding. See how it has their name Land Grove Coffee on the front? It's too much branding.
Two different names. Yeah.
I don't mind the detonator, but like, I don't know. It's overkill in the branding. That's my feedback. Do you want to give me feedback, my feedback, John?
I don't know. Zach, it sounds like you're fairly critical. Are you that critical with yourself?
I'm pretty critical of myself. Yeah. Hard on myself.
That's funny. Someone else brought something up. Crucial conversation, John. That's a cool concept, and that's a crucial conversations. It's a process. It was a book written some time ago. It talked about how to generally frame up critical or important conversations, and sometimes the most important conversations, the crucial conversations, are difficult ones because we have to address a performance issue with somebody. Or a rent or some process in the relationship. Hey, you did this and I feel this. And great team building typically involves some form of helping people feel safe with providing people feedback and or criticism. And how to do that, you know, there's a half dozen ways. But I think that's the point of the comment.
I was just Googling that book. Is it a book you'd recommend?
I would, absolutely. Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's funny because we're trying to get NRS to sponsor the show. And so I've been pandering to them, saying how great they are and suggesting people buy stuff from them, hoping they come to us and like, we want to sponsor the show.
They should absolutely, because you're approaching the topic, the entire topic, from such a well-rounded perspective with experts from different fields. I mean,
John, you're our first experts from different fields. We need more well-rounded experts from different fields. But you're a good step in the right direction. NRS, someday will be good enough for the sponsorship.
That's right.
Does that book, John, does it mention rapport? Does it talk about that as a...
I recall, and I will say that any conversation, any meaningful conversation involves rapport. Mm-hmm. So... Zach, and you hit on this earlier, you say, you know, if you give 7 positive things in the context of a relationship, what you've already done is developed a sense of safety and trust. So when that negative 7th or 8th or whatever comes in, it's like kind of like, okay, this guy actually kind of understands me as a person, kind of respects who I am, what I'm doing. That's the purpose. That's why you give a feedback process and a positive one. And you said, if you could walk around all day and do it, you would. And keep doing it, because then your directness, and again, I sense that you favor directness over an indirect approach, just my sense of it. But your directness will, I mean, it'll just fall easier on people.
Yeah. Once I tell people, I warn people like, hey, I'm a very direct person. Get ready.
Yes. Best thing you can do.
Yeah. You should know that this is who I am. I'm not going to beat around the bush with you. But I mean, it's true that we're all different. And so like I have my own style that doesn't work for the people and vice versa. Like I've developed my own style for developing rapport. What I was going to ask, like, let's go back to rapport. What are strategies you think people can employ to have better rapport?
Doug, you're in this too.
I think, yeah. I mean, we talked about a lot of them, joking with people, noticing things about them, giving them compliments or liking how they do something and just talking with people, period. Yeah.
Talking and then also some sharing something about yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, a sense of vulnerability, because oftentimes the trick is with a direct approach is understood as a power dynamic. It's like, the power, like, okay, you're the boss man and you're going to say something. And I'm like, I feel inferior. Whatever insecurities people have, and everybody has them, it's not right or wrong. It's part of being human. It can ping on that stuff. And then, so you know, performance declines because they're afraid to make a decision. They're afraid to make a call. They're made to, you know, they're on hyper alert, which doesn't help anybody. So what you're trying to do is diffuse all that and help them feel safe and say, you know what, mistakes are part of it. Some are critical, mission critical mistakes, which can never happen, right? And if they do, we've got major problems. And here's kind of the realm of what's possible and what's available. And you know what? I'm going to give you feedback. It's going to be, I'm going to intend it always as your learning, because our company is about learning. You know, it's the whole thing. I'm learning all the time. And you guys are going to help me teach and you're going to help me learn, because we're all learning from each other. So if you got feedback from me, I'm interested, but never say, can I give you feedback? I mean, crystal clear, never, ever, ever.
Dougie does it to me all the time.
Ever do that.
Zach, I think after this, everybody's going
to
do it.
Dougie does it to me to mess with me. That's funny. That's just how I am. Hey, when you mentioned insecure, I'll tell you another trick I've been doing lately. When I'm a trip leader, and I may or may not have done this on your trip, John, I'll say, are there any questions? And people don't say anything.
No,
they don't want to answer, but I want them to ask questions. They have questions. And so I then say, just so you all know, I'm an incredibly insecure person, and you can make me feel more secure with myself by helping me answer a question, because it makes me feel valued.
Cool.
And I think that there's two things. One, it makes you vulnerable, especially when you're like, Mr. Like, I'm in charge trip leader person, and you express that you're an insecure person. Everybody is. So they can't blame you for that. And two, it gives them a reason to ask a question. And I always get at least one question when I say that. I've just started doing that like this season, I think. And I probably didn't do that with you guys, cause I wanted to look really cool. I was afraid of like being too.
Right.
But, it's a trick I've used before to like engender questions.
It's cool. It also shows that you are paying attention to these soft skills or power skills. You know, you are attentive to them, and you're learning about, like any good business owner or guide or leader or someone who has a core value of wanting to grow professionally and personally. You're paying attention to this stuff. It's really cool. Another strategy to use is simply saying, great job, everybody. Okay, what questions do you have? Now, instead of saying, do you have any questions, which is a yes or no answer, you can ask what's called a presuppositional question. You're presupposing that people have questions. So you simply ask, what questions do you have? Because it presupposes that they do have questions.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I didn't get that at first. What questions do you have? Oh, I've never even thought about that.
That's pretty good.
We use this in healthcare a lot, because if you ask somebody, do you have any questions? I'm not sure. I'm going to judge my question. I'm going to be in my head about it. I don't know if it's worthy. I forget it. But if you say, what questions do you have? It presupposes that they have questions.
I remember when I got some feedback once. So when I would give a class or something at Knowles and then at the end I would say, does that make sense? Or I could say that a lot during the class, talk about something and does that make sense? And somebody said, you know, maybe you shouldn't ask it that way, because that makes them think that if it doesn't make sense, maybe they're not getting it and they're dumb or something. So,
Yeah, I'm trying that on right now. And I go, well, does that make sense? And oftentimes what you're watching, and I imagine you're doing this really well, Doug, is you're actually watching their body language for how they're responding to how you're teaching them. And there are a lot of ways to play with it. Now, we can get super wonky right now, but if you ask somebody if it makes sense, you really have to break down for a second and ask, well, what's, if they say, yeah, you could follow that up and say, what sense does it make? Mm-hmm. Okay, what sense does it make? Well, how many senses do you have? Well, 5 senses. So if it makes sense, in what way does it make sense? Don't do this. You're going to freak people out. I'm just telling you. I just like that. Remember I said at the top, I just want to sound smart. So here I am trying to do that.
Yeah.
But don't ever do it because you're just going to go, wah. But sometimes often people have create a mental representation for what you're trying to teach them, which is why modeling, when you're actually demonstrating it, makes such a powerful impact on how somebody's brain actually codifies the information that you're trying to share with them. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to create as much visual as you can. And when you tell a story, and imagine you do this too, when you tell a story in addition to a piece of information that's critical, when you start to, when you frame it around an experience and ask them, have you ever blank, 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 so that they can associate to it. Mm-hmm. These are all things that are, you know, again, super wonky, but I don't know, for some, super interesting.
Yeah. I think breaking down that power dynamic is significant.
Clutch. Yeah. Foundational. Everything else after that gets better. And I would say anything without that struggles. You can do it, but everything struggles without that rapport and relationship, which is why if you've noted, I guess what I take out of the river trip too, and this was also when talking with Tilly and kind of the whole purpose of the show we're doing, is that there's a, you know, there's something, I'll use the word magical, but you guys know it better than I do. There's something really magical that happens between guests and clients that on a trip. I mean, there's this, people walk in their own thing, but after a day, and Tate actually mentioned this, after a day or less, I mean, people are in this jam together generally, and they're totally in rapport because they're experiencing something really difficult together, challenging together. And the guides facilitate that. It's really cool.
Dougie, you would have been blown away by the last night. This is how I like to do things. And remember that trip I did with you on the road last year, Dougie, with same camp, Lower Solitude. Mm-hmm. We had that breakfast where I was making people like omelets. Same thing happened on this trip, you know, where like people came up and it was super disorganized. but like everybody was engaged and like all the guests were hanging out the kitchen. So instead of it being like, here's the guys cooking and here's the guests over here, it was just everybody was hanging out as one big group, and everybody's getting fed and engaging. And the night before too, that dinner we had, I mean, the kitchen was where everybody was. It was just like we were cooking things, and some guys can't do that. They're like, I cannot have guests in the kitchen. You will go over there while I cook. But like, we were just so all having a good time, and like we were doing our work, but our work is so easy to us. We just were doing it while we're having conversations and people are having fun. We're playing games. And I love that. You know, that's how you know a trip is like really gels, when like there's not two groups. It's like everybody wants to be together, and including guides. We wanted them in the kitchen with us because we were enjoying spending time with them.
It was cool. I noticed that too, Zach. Remember, because Thomas brought all the stuff on top of the hill, and we're like, and next thing you know, everyone's like, I want to hang out in the kitchen. And you know, people were just sleeping around the kitchen. It was it was pretty cool.
Yeah, people were sleeping in the kitchen, and it wasn't safe. That's where safety took a little bit of a backseat, because we had the blaster going. There's knives everywhere, hot water. Like, I was like, okay, let's just make sure nobody gets hurt doing this, because the kitchen's a dangerous place. But I think that really, I really like that. I think I like that vibe. Yeah. Hey, I thought I have a couple things while we're talking. I forgot them, but I want to share one thing with you guys really quick that really changed a quote. The change the way I think about things along these lines. I don't know if you guys read Tom Peters' books. Do you guys know who Tom Peters is? Mm-hmm. Barry knows who Tom Peters is. Barry and I talk about him a lot. He's a guy who wrote some of the first business books in the 80s. And one of them, In Search of Excellence, is still read in business schools today. It was written like 1980. Yeah. Yep. And his big quote is, hard is soft and soft is hard.
It's like, cool.
You made me think about this. Like, this is a quote I think about a lot, and how I change things. Like that's like, it's all about the people and relationships and this stuff. And the hard for us would be the hard skills. That's actually the soft part. So I thought this quote was in
line. The power skills.
It's clutch.
Power. Yep.
And power skills. And the technical skills, you know, back to the idea of performance psychology, people are going to perform better when they have a state of general overall that's appropriate for the task. In other words, not panicked, which is kind of exactly what we don't want. We want people to have a state of performing really well. And leaders and organizations and teams create this kind of safety and a general sense. And when you do that, people are executing better on all fronts. And that's something that you're watching anyway, Zach, but you may also have the opportunity to pay attention to, like, well, that's kind of interesting how these guys are actually doing this. And then ask them.
Explain that again. Who's actually doing what?
How people are performing, and I'll use the word how they're executing the task. How do you feel? And I asked you, you probably asked it, I don't know, a half dozen times. How do you feel about that, Tate? How do you feel about that? I watched it asked.
Oh, I was asked. I asked that.
Yeah.
To Tate.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I want to do. Are you okay with it? Is that, you mean like that?
No. Just like, cause I forgot the rapper where she had the what's it called? It was a good one. The big, there was a class four. What is it?
Oh, Blossom Bar.
Yeah, Blossom Bar. All right. So she was like, you could tell she was a heightened arousal, what we would call it, right? She was like, okay, am I going to do this?
She had some like VIPs in that boat.
I know. And don't think it wasn't on her mind.
Yeah. But, and she was being recorded for a TV show with VIPs in her boat. There's a lot of pressure. I
mean, no pressure whatsoever.
Yeah.
So anyway, but her performance is much to do with the fact that you have confidence in her, and she has confidence in herself, of course, but we can help instill that with how we talk to them. Say, you know, you got this, and you know, like any good coach would do.
There's a curve that is, I think it's called optimum learning curve, where right in the middle is where you're comfortable and it's a little bit out of your zone, but you've got the skills. And then as you go up, obviously you're going to be too scared to perform. And as you go down, you're not learning very much because it's too easy for you. So it's kind of like that. It's not the same because you're talking about performing rather than learning, but a little bit similar.
Yeah, no, they fit similar curves. So it's good.
It's funny that Blossom Bar Scout, I thought about this. I needed to make sure she was okay, but I had to do it in a way that didn't ruin her confidence.
I get it.
There's a way you walk up and you're like, you're good. There's a way you can do it where they're like, I don't know, am I not good? Like, you know, there's a way you can do it. And there's a way that's like, hey, I'm just checking in. You're good. I have faith in you, but I just want to make sure you're good. Cool. And like, so very quick, you're good, right? Cool. And move on versus like a judgmental, are you good? There's a subtle difference to it.
Yeah.
And if I am questioning if she's good or not, they could hurt her confidence.
Yeah. And the subtlety with how you, if you did it that way, and I'm not sure if you did, but are you good? You're good, right? That's a pretty strong presupposition. I'm going to throw it at you. You're good, right?
Yeah.
I'm not asking if you're good. I'm confirming that you're good, which doesn't give me a lot of room to actually respond.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't, I mean, back to just language wonkery.
It was wonkery.
I wouldn't say
it. It's more like, I want to hear, like, I think you're, I feel comfortable with that. I shall make sure in a good mental state.
Yeah.
Are you trying to see if she give her room to ask you something?
If she's uncomfortable, I want to know. But I don't want to question her ability to do it. I want her to know I have confidence in her, and I want to make sure she has confidence in herself.
Yeah.
And if she didn't, what would her be her? What would she would just say?
How can we fix this?
Yeah.
Got it.
What would do it? What do you need to be good?
Right.
Do you want to take my vote? Do you want to switch boats? Do you want to switch people?
Yeah.
I probably would have walked some people. I probably would have forced walk. There were some people that maybe were going to walk around. I'd been like, hey, you're walking around.
Right.
Like, I'd be like, everything good? And if she's like, actually, I'm a little nervous. I'm like, hey, what can I do to fix that? Make this so that doesn't happen.
That's nice.
But it was just me and her. I like separated us. So it wasn't in front of everybody. I'm not in front of everybody to say that. Mm-hmm. I like made sure we were separate when we talked about it.
Yeah. But it all works if she's honest with you. So you wouldn't want to confirm it. The right question sometimes is, and the way to do this is 0 to 10. How confident are you? Or how ready are you for this?
Yeah.
0 to 10. And if someone goes, you know, you can watch them because their body language is going to tell you, you know, 9. Okay. How can we make it a 10? What do you need to make it a 10?
I think what happens a lot too is we ask questions not wanting any answer, but we're good. And so you're good, right? And the only answer is yes, because you don't want the other answer.
That's exactly right.
And you're getting it off your chest. Like, oh, I asked.
Yeah.
And so you ask questions in a way that, and you do it with certain body language and bravado or whatever, that the only answer you get is the one that you wanted. And you have to ask the question in a way that gets the answer, which is really hard.
Right. It is really hard, and it's really important, right? Because it matters. If for whatever reason she were to go, if she didn't have the chance to say, I'm really, really nervous about this, you know, that could have bad consequences.
Yeah. And just to be clear, not nervous because she's not a good guide. She had some VIPs in this boat, and this was for television. So, and it's a Blossom Bar. So this isn't a reflection of her. I didn't ask her. I'm not worried about her. There was a lot of pressure at the time.
A lot of pressure. And we would say on the production crew, we would say, well, this could make for really good television.
Yep. And on top of everything, while we were filming, the battery for the camera died. And John and I had to get a battery. We had to tell her and the camera, the producer wanted to stop her. Right. And I was like, no, I can't.
We were like goats down that rock, man.
But I was like, my first instinct was like, no, she is in a mental state. She needs to be, I can't just say, hey, hold on while we get a battery. I'm going to protect her. But then once she had it out and she looked happy, I was like, Tate, can you hold on a second while we grab the battery? She's like, yeah, I'm good. Got the battery, did the rapid. It worked fine. But my first instinct was like, no.
It's like, cool. No, I actually, that was a cool, I mean, you got that. You knew that, you know, double checking. It's like a kicker, right? You don't call a timeout just before they, you know, kick the ball through the
court. You want to ice. It was icing the kicker.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
He was like, hey, hold on. We need a new battery. And it's not a quick thing to get that battery.
No, I got it. Wow. I remember it was,
I ran down the boat. I threw it to John at Blossom. He runs it up, gets it in the camera. They're running again.
That's right. Yeah. So it was pretty good teamwork. Overall, it was awesome. And all the listeners should know that she crushed it. She absolutely hit it perfectly. It was fun to watch.
Yep. Well, we probably need to start closing this show down. I think we talked about a lot of things, and I'm wondering if Dougie or John, if you guys want to sum it up, because I'm like taking it in, and I kind of want to like wrap this into like five bullet points I can write down and think about tomorrow when I'm driving to Idaho.
I'll say one, John, then you can say one, but I mean, we talked about this a lot, rapport, building rapport, and that allowing you to perform from there, give feedback to people, get feedback from people, have their confidence, have them have fun, feel comfortable.
Yep. I would agree with that. Rapport is the foundation of most performance on a great functioning team. I would say rapport, which is a subset of relationship. So relationship is the foundation of a great functioning team, a high functioning special operations team, a rafting guide team. It's also in what we call the dyad between a guide and a client, you know, between two people. This relationship stuff is kind of the foundation of everything. So, you know, I kind of came to this with an interest in performance, like how you all perform, you know, what kind of mindset do you have, not just for connection, but how you manage the hard technical skills, how to the degree to which you're intentional about the skills. And I would, you know, Doug, obviously that training that you've done and the important work that you do with those kids is evident that, you know, there's a real intention to create these kind of experiences where it's not just about safety, but it's also about growth and enjoyment and learning and, you know, what the world can teach you and the environment can teach you and the power of the river and a bunch of other things.
That's just what Sawyer just said about having growth mindset.
Yeah, exactly.
I like with receiving feedback for sure. And also with giving. I mean, that's kind of goes along with what Zach was said, is how that feedback's presented, if it's presented with a growth mindset, and how you think that person might receive it. Think about how Zach wants to receive it, or how mood he's in.
And I think we can work on Zach. I think Zach's got some opportunity. We can make sure that we get out of that.
Dougie's been working on me for a long time.
That's cool. And I don't know, as far as bullet points, I would say, you know, you talk about performance in so many different ways as you look at all the different ways. And the gear is a big topic of performance. And when you say gear garage, yeah, the garage, the gear in the garage matters, but I'm going to propose that you got a garage between your ears and you got some gear up there, right? And you got a way of thinking about it. You got a way of approaching it and trying to create a great, safe experience for people. And I'd say everything inside the garage in your head is as important or more important than the stuff you got in the other garage.
I want to ask one more question because I took some notes here. You said relationships are the foundation of performance. How, and then building rapport is important. Is it important to build relationships, which are the foundation of performance, or does building rapport do something else?
Relationship is a rapport is like a condition of relationship. So we can have a relationship, you know, because we're in the same boat together, but we may not necessarily have rapport.
Got it.
Right? So relationship is not just the proximity, but the rapport is the general flow that you enter in with another person to execute on a task.
Okay.
And we talked about this in the beginning, but you don't have to necessarily like the person to have some rapport. I mean, it's better.
That's right.
And it's better. You can work towards that, but kind of like you said in the beginning, Zach, you can't make sure that team is going to work well together before you hire everybody, or you know, people get thrown on last minute sometimes.
Yeah.
But they can still have rapport and not necessarily maybe have had previous conflict. If they're a professional, they can work through that and still have rapport.
That's right. And so how you structure that gear in your garage is we would call it mindset. Seriously, it's mindset, not in the Dweck concept of fixed or growth mindset, but your mindset to connect with people matters. So if you had one tip for your guides or even yourself, sometimes if you're working with others, is an intent to connect.
I like that. I'm writing down some notes just so I can dwell on this later. And I like intent to connect. That's really good. Would you say feedback is a key to developing rapport or relationships? Like, how does feedback relate to rapport and relationships?
Go ahead, Doug.
I don't think it's.
I'd agree.
I don't think it's key to having rapport feedback.
No, it's not.
Yeah,
it's an independent thing. We can have rapport without any exchange of feedback or criticism, constructive criticism, or learning, or anything like that. We can just have rapport because we're just chatting it up. Rapport and trust and solid, good relationship is a very good foundation for providing useful and well-received feedback.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
Well-received. And it's not like people don't want feedback, but sometimes they don't. You already said it, but how we give feedback really does matter. And it is relational and rapport based.
Growth mindset, it's a pretty common term. A lot of people know what it is, but I like Barrett's last comment there. It's basically just the word yet. Adding that to anything is what growth mindset is to
me. Yeah, it is. It's really good.
I can't do this yet. Huh.
I can't do this yet, as opposed to I can't do this yet. That's pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. Is growth mindset a book or what is that?
It is. It's actually a whole theoretical concept by a lady named Carol Dweck. D-W-E-K. C-K. K? CK.
It's the idea of where fixed mindset versus growth mindset. Fixed being you are how you are and you're not going to change or get better.
That's right.
Growth is I will learn to roll with my kayak. I just can't do it quite yet, or I haven't perfected it yet.
We see this when we hire guides. A lot of guides think they're already perfect. They're like, I'm awesome. I'm perfect. Like, you can hire me and I'm going to just be awesome. And then if you tell me things, that's stupid because I'm already perfect. I see that a lot. Uh-huh. And so we want people who are ongoing training. We call it ongoing training, like they're ongoing improvement. So one of our questions in our interviews is do you believe in ongoing improvement in training? And people always say yes, but at least it sets the stage. Like, we expect people to be continually getting better. We're not just hiring people that are perfect. And I think those people who are perfect, when they get feedback, it's defensive and it's just a mess.
Yeah. I think another thing you can do with that feedback is always give the feedback in past tense. So the last time you tried this, this is what didn't go well, versus you always do this wrong every time you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where the growth mindset too.
Yeah. You always get feedback wrong, Doug.
Just make sure you ask permission first, Doug.
Doug, can I give you some feedback?
Sure.
I don't have any. Okay. I'm going to sum this up in four things I'm going to dwell on. One is relationships. Two is the rapport and trust are the key to well-received feedback and more. Three is feedback, to think about that more. And four is think about the intention to connect. What do you think?
And don't forget your gear garage.
The gear garage. The gear garage.
Power skills.
Your brain.
Yeah, and power skills. So, you know, in other words, when you're setting the stage for the values and communicating the values of your company, you know, just keep emphasizing, your technical skills, but it's how you communicate. It's really important.
Carol Dweck, Stanford. All right.
Yeah.
She must CK. Be smart. Those people are really smart. Okay. Well, let's, should we close this show down? Do we have any final, before we do, any final things to say?
Good job summing it up, Zach.
Yep. Well
That's
done.
That's some positive feedback for you.
What did you say, Doug? I didn't hear you.
Good job summing it up.
Doug, can I give you some feedback?
Can he, Doug?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Zach, can I give you some feedback?
Oh, yeah, you can.
Kaizen.
Great job summing it up.
Okay.
Barrett also mentioned Kaizen. I don't remember what that word is. I know that it's Japanese word.
Oh, Kaizen, yeah. That's a...
continual improvement?
It's maximum output, I think. It's Toyota's motto. I remember that.
Isn't that continual improvement? Like the thing with the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's read comments.
Yeah.
I've seen that word too many times.
Yeah, Barrett's saying continual improvement. I read a book about it once.
Japanese word, good change or improvement. So it's a. We talked about it, I think, for a minute. But I think isn't that one of the values of your company, core values?
Continual improvement. Yeah, I would say so. I don't know if we have core values written down. But if it's an interview question, it's a core value. Like that's what we're checking on, the core value. So that we're all getting, that everybody's continually improving.
Yep.
Cool. I'm going to close the show down. It's interesting. We didn't really miss Aaron this week. This is, people are saying it's one of our best shows and Aaron wasn't here. That kind of says something. I don't know.
Don't give that feedback to Aaron unless you ask permission.
Feedback. That guy needs some feedback. But Aaron's on the subway this week. I'm going to be in the Middle Fork next week. So probably no live shows next week, unless Dougie and Aaron can figure out how to do one without me. And John, you're always welcome. If you want to come on a show, we'll have to put you on the invite list.
Cool.
As a reminder, these are shows we do Friday at 2 PM live, but probably not next Friday. Please don't forget to like and subscribe. And John, if people want to find your blog or Twitter or just more about you, where do they go?
PatientSuccessSystems.com.
Patient Success System. I'll put a link in the show notes below. And
that's my website.
Cool. And John, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, man. Thanks for the trip last week, Zach. It was really cool. It was a great experience, and you guys did a great job.
Thank you. And stay on after we're done because we can still talk a little more. But so sometimes when I say, hey, the show's over. Okay. Like people have never done this, leave. I'm gonna close this down, and we'll catch up with everybody later on.
Yep.